Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 18, Dan Lundauer, and today it's May 27th, 2023. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So can you share with the audience why and how you got prescribed a benzo?
So I guess I'll start off by saying that I had anxiety and depression even from childhood. And I kind of come from one of these families with a lot of generational trauma that was unresolved and kind of passed on to me. And, you know, I don't blame anybody for it. I don't blame my parents for it, but I think it just is what it is. And so I can just remember from even around 5 years old, 6 years old, I can remember feeling really sad and anxious and just not really having tools to deal with life. Right. And yeah, I got to middle school and I remember, you know, being bullied, and it was a really hard time for me. And, you know, I kind of had a lot of rage and a lot of anger, and I would just shove those emotions deep down, didn't know how to deal with it. I was scared. I was kind of a skinny little kid, and I had like these big front teeth. And it was just, it was a hard time. It was a hard time. And I was in this kind of a rough, not really rough, but it was, I guess, rough for me because I was just a, you know, kind of skinny little underdeveloped kid. And, you know, there's kids older than me and pushed me around, and it was scary. It was a scary time for me. And I think that that trauma on top of everything kind of always stuck with me because I was just, you know, I would get it at school and then, you know, I'd go home and didn't really have much understanding there. And so, you know, life went on and I got to high school. Life started to get a little bit better. And I still always had this kind of lingering depression, this kind of like undercurrent of depression and anxiety that I just really couldn't shake. And, you know, I started smoking a little pot, drinking a little bit on the weekends, you know, nothing big, but it kind of became a part of my life a little bit. And that offered me some relief. And then I went to my mom and I said, I'm really sad. I've had this depression forever, for a long time, you know, and I don't know what to do about it. And that was the first time I spoke out about the way that I felt. Right. And she, you know, like trying to be a good mother and trying to do the best by me, offered me what she could, which was that, you know, in the 90s, big pharma world, you know, it was a chemical imbalance, and that's what big pharma was pushing in the 90s.
Right.
And so, you know, the solution looked like it would be an SSRI. So about 1998 or so, in comes my first psych med, and it was 50 milligrams of Zoloft.
Okay.
And yeah. And it changed me. It kind of changed me profoundly. You know, I was kind of this musician, hippie type kid, you know, pretty low key, pretty easygoing, pretty mild. And it made me kind of aggressive and combative and loud. And all of a sudden, like, I cut my hair and wanted to play punk rock. And like, I just kind of,
whoa. Okay.
It changed me. And, you know, looking back on it, like, I can kind of see where, you know, it wasn't the change that I needed. It wasn't a good thing. But at the time, it felt like, okay, I'm not feeling so depressed and sad anymore, you know?
Right.
I kind of felt like it was the first time I could break out of my shell. So I think in my mind, what I thought was, you know, if I'm feeling bad, I can take something for it. You know, there's a pill solution for the way that I feel. And so, you know, moving on, I started partying a lot, you know, and I got into the whole, the drinking scene, the bars, you know, cause it alleviated my depression for a while, but it wasn't a solution. you know, the depression came back, and I would start to hit these really, really low bottoms with it, mm-hmm. where I was like, what is going on? You know, I'm taking the Zoloft, you know, it's not working. I'm sad. I'm having these low depression and anxiety attacks. And so I think around the age of 19 or 20, I really started to get heavy into hard drugs and kind of dabble with, you know, everything that was out there that I could kind of get my hands on and experiment. And I started to go down a bad path, you know, you know, I started to get my hands on, you know, coke and heroin, and I was taking the stuff and just to try to, you know, change the way that I felt. I was trying to self-medicate. I had all this trauma that was unresolved, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have the tools to deal with it. And so around this time, you know, I'm 19, 20 years old, 21, whatever. And I'm taking all these drugs, I'm experimenting. And so this guy that I work with, who is an ex-con dishwasher at this restaurant that I was working at the time, offered me some pills. And I said, what are these? And he said, well, it's a Xanax. And I'd heard of Xanax before, but I had never taken it. And me being the experimenter that I was at the time, you know, he offered me some, and I said, well, yeah, I'll take some. Absolutely. And I did. And it offered me the greatest amount of relief I had ever felt in my life. I mean, when I first took Xanax and benzos, it was like the way that I always wanted to feel. And I just could never get there with anything else. You know, it alleviated my anxiety. It alleviated any social anxiety that I had. I felt like I was free. I felt like I could break out of my shell that I was always trapped inside of. I mean, it was like, I thought it was a miracle drug. I really did. I thought, this is what I have always been looking for.
Right.
And I just could never feel the way that I wanted to feel. And, you know,
did that inspire you to get your own prescription?
Yeah, it absolutely did. It absolutely did. You know, and because my drinking had escalated so high, my drug use had escalated so high, and I knew that that obviously was not the way I wanted to live. I mean, I wanted to, you know, get rid of that lifestyle. I wanted to, you know, get back to kind of a normal lifestyle, go back to college, do all these things, but I just couldn't do it. But I figured if I could get a prescription of Xanax and just settle on that, that maybe I could lead the kind of life that I wanted to, and it would allow me to live the kind of life that I wanted to. So right. Yeah, it absolutely made me seek out a prescription. So that's what I did.
And did you get Xanax or Klonopin, and did your Zoloft prescription go on, or how would that go?
Yeah, so I was still taking Zoloft the entire time, kind of on and off, but for the most part, the majority of the time, I was taking Zoloft in conjunction with the Xanax. So I went to a general practitioner and, you know, told him what was going on, told him, you know, I have anxiety disorder, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not hard to get. All you have to do is say the right words and they give you what you want pretty much. And I did. I got 0.5 milligrams of Xanax to take twice a day. That's what he gave me. And with the Zoloft, in conjunction with the Zoloft. So it, you know, in the beginning, it was very, you know, it worked in the beginning for me. And that's what I think is so dangerous about these drugs for so many of us, is in the beginning you take it and you're like, oh my God, like this is what, you know, it actually works. This is what I was looking for to alleviate my symptoms, or, you know, whatever it is. For me, it was just kind of debilitating anxiety, alcoholism. And so I found that with the Xanax, I could cut out all the other nonsense, and I could really cut down on my drinking, and I could cut down on the drug use, and I could just, oh my God, I could take two of these little orange pills a day and I can function. That's amazing. So, you know, I took those for a couple of years. I went back to college and I'm starting to get my life together. I settled down with a really good girl and it stopped working. I was taking it for 2 years, I think, at that point, consistently with my doctor. And all of a sudden, I'm getting all this anxiety and I'm getting these panic attacks out of nowhere. And I was taking it as prescribed. And I was just freaking out and I didn't know what to do. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I can't go to class. What am I going to do? I don't want to drop out of college. How am I going to get to work? And it started to get really scary, really, really fast. You know, the way that it stopped working, it was almost night and day for me. It was crazy. So I go to the psych doc at the college and she sits me down. She says, well, we need to up your dose. And we need to give you Xanax XR, Xanax extended release. And I said, I really don't want to, I know that if I keep upping this dose, you know, what's the point? Like, where does it stop? Am I just going to have to keep, you know, increasing it forever until I'm just, you know, a zombie? Like, where does it? And she goes, well, no, you know, you don't have to take it forever, blah, 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 blah. It's fine. Just take it, you know, it'll help you. You'll get through your midterm exams and blah, blah, blah. So I kind of threw up my hands at that point. And I said, well, I have to do what I have to do because, I mean, the 0.5 twice a day I've been taking isn't working. So I started the Xanax XR and I took that for a few years. And then I switched to Ativan. And I can't remember really like where, when, and how all that happened. But I know at some point it went from Xanax XR to Ativan. And then eventually I had a new psych doc. And this was around 2011 when my daughter was born. And the Ativan stopped working. And I was like, oh, crap, here we go again. Like, I'm going into this horrible pit of anxiety, despair, depression. I know what this is. I've been here before. What am I supposed to do? Because I knew at that point that I couldn't just stop abruptly taking it. I knew that. I knew enough to know that that was dangerous and could be fatal. And I also knew that if I accidentally skipped a dose, I would lose my freaking mind. So right. I knew that I was trapped in a sense. And, you know, it was a mess of a time. You know, my opiate addiction was also escalating during this point. And I didn't know what to do. I felt like I was trapped. So I went to this new psych doc. He prescribed me Klonopin. This is when the Klonopin comes in, about 2011. Mm-hmm. And he starts me off on, I don't remember what I was taking of Ativan, but he switches me directly over to 3 milligrams a day of Klonopin.
Whoa, that's a pretty solid dose.
That is a pretty solid dose. It's pretty heavy. He also diagnosed me with bipolar, so he put me on Lamictal.
And Zoloft also, is still in the picture here.
Zoloft is still in the picture. Good old okay. Zoloft. Still there. Yeah, still kicking. My best friend, just yeah, always at my side. So Zoloft, Lamictal, Klonopin, Inderol also I was taking this entire time. And, you know, again, at first, the Klonopin seemed like it was working, seemed like it was, you know, alleviating the anxiety again. And I rocked and rolled with that guy for a couple of years. And now I started to just go down this horrible, horrible opiate addiction alongside with this heavy dose of Klonopin and these other psych meds that I was taking. So quickly, within the next few years, my life just began to unravel. You know, the Klonopin was just absolutely turning me into this zombified, depressive mess of a person. You know, I began to have suicidal ideations, where I just didn't want to live anymore. You know, I felt like the only thing that I was living with was this constant black mass hanging over my head. Every morning that I would wake up, I got so, so depressed. And, you know, I'm taking all these psych meds, they're not working. I can't get my opiate addiction under control. I've got this beautiful 3-year-old daughter and you know, I don't want to die. I don't want to kill myself and leave her, but I just don't know what else to freaking do. You know, I'm losing my mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go back to my doctor and I'm like, look, I have to be honest with you. I've got a bad opiate addiction. I'm depressed. I'm miserable. I'm thinking about killing myself. I need help. So he refers me to another doctor in his practice. And this other doctor puts me on Suboxone, which is for opiate addicts, to kind of curb the cravings. At the same point, he puts me on a drug called Vyvanse. And it wasn't a drug I asked for. It wasn't a drug I knew about. He just asked me if I had ever had workplace tiredness. And I'm like, well, yeah, sometimes I get tired at work. Well, he goes, well, this drug kicks ass. That's literally what he said.
What kind of drug is that?
It's a stimulant. It's an upper. It's kind of along the same lines as like Adderall.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that was their solution to your problems.
Precisely. A narcotic stimulant.
Okay.
Yeah, let's throw that into the mix, right? So I'm on Suboxone, Klonopin, Inderol, Zoloft, Vyvanse. And then I tell him, I'm like, look, you know, I'm still having all this anxiety. What are we going to do about that? So he ups my 3 milligrams of Klonopin to 5 milligrams a day.
Whoa. That was so massive. Now, oh my God.
Right. So it is massive. It is a very, very heavy dose. So now I'm on just this cocktail of meds that is just absolutely destroying me and it probably just shooting holes in my brain every single day. I mean, I went completely sideways. I was a mess. I was falling asleep in the middle of the day. You know, I was getting these like weird, like sores on my body. I started to have ocular migraines, which I don't know if you're familiar with what those are.
I don't, but I'm presuming something with sight and headaches or something, or?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really strange. It's hard to describe, but basically I was outside one night and I was looking at a street light and it was kind of like the street light started to kind of blur. And then like, it's hard to describe, but I don't know. It was crazy. It was a crazy experience and it really freaked me out. And it was kind of like visual hallucinations is the best way that I can describe it to you. So I go to a different doctor and he prescribes me Valium on top of everything else that I'm taking. So now I've got Valium in the picture too. And I'm just completely coming unglued, right? I mean, I just wanted to die and I couldn't take it anymore. So my family didn't know what to do with me. You know, they're looking at me like, just what is going on with Dan? You know, we've got to do something with him. So they urged me to go into a treatment center. And I said, okay. You know, I didn't know what else to do. I was highly underinformed of what treatment centers do or don't do regarding taking people off of benzodiazepines.
Right.
But I was just at a loss. I mean, I was just coming unglued. So I agreed. I went to this place down in South Florida, a few hours from where I live. I got checked in and they took a look at everything that I was taking. They had me pee in one of those little cups that lights up and they said, oh my God, it's lighting up like a Christmas tree. You know, you have like every drug known to man in your system. And the doctors there sat me down. They took a look at everything that my doctor was giving me and they said, yeah, we'll be able to get you off of all these meds in 9 days. And I didn't know any better.
You believe them? You're like, oh, cool.
You know, I was in such a fog and also ignorant to a taper. I didn't, you know, taper wasn't even part of my vocabulary. I did so little research on what it takes to come off of these drugs that I did accept that that's what we were going to do. I knew enough to say, I mean, I wasn't completely stupid. I knew that you couldn't just stop them abruptly. Like I knew that. So I said, what are you going to give me? And they said, oh, don't worry. We have medications here. We'll keep you comfortable is what they told me.
Sounds promising.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a great, great plan, right?
So oh, what happened? God.
So what happened was they tapered me in 9 days. And during those 9 days, I was fine. I really, you know, I went down from, you know, 5 milligrams to 4.5 to 4 to 3.5. And, you know, everybody in the rehab, I was locked in this little place with about 150 other people. And, you know, everybody in there was telling me, oh, my God, it's the Suboxone. That's what's going to be hard to come off of. You know, hold on tight. Just hold on. That's what's going to be tough. And I was like, okay, yeah, okay, I'll grip my seat and, you know, we'll see what happens. After the 9 days, I was off of of everything, except they left in Zoloft for some reason. I don't know why. I think they forgot to take it out of the mix. But anyway, I think the day they took me off of everything, I was still okay. But I think it was about 24 hours later is when, so when you're in treatment or in rehab, for anybody who's familiar with it, they kind of keep you on a schedule every day. So they have you go to groups and, you know, I was sitting in this group with about, I don't know, 20 other people. And I just remember this feeling came over me like, holy shit, what is going on? I'm losing my mind. I've never felt anything like this before. It was like anxiety skyrocketing times 10. My body started to shake. I started to sweat profusely. And I started not being able to think, and I started losing my grasp of reality pretty quickly. And I'm like, oh my God, maybe this is the Suboxone. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So it's kind of hard to remember. This is 7.5 years ago, you know, but the best I can recall is that I went to my room and there were three beds to a room and my bed was the furthest against the wall. And I laid in my bed and I stared at this brick wall and I shook and I sweated and I went out of my mind for about 3 days straight. Well, basically nobody in that facility gave a crap about what was going on with me. Oh. And I was in complete psychosis. I mean, I couldn't, I really was having a hard time differentiating reality from fantasy, from my surroundings, what was going on. Smells were absolutely magnified times 100. I remember them using some cleaning solution, and it was like, it was so powerful to me that it made me sick. It made me sick. I remember trying to get up to take a shower and turning on the faucet, and I remember the water coming out, like hitting me, like it felt like pins and needles. It was excruciatingly painful. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was just out of my mind. I couldn't even advocate for myself.
So they just left you there in that condition for 3 days?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then after the 3 days, what happens?
So I think on the third day, I eventually spoke up and I made it down to the nurse's station or one of the doctors who was in the building that day. And I said, look, I'm coming out of my mind. I can't hardly talk. I said, I'm going to put my fist through the glass and I'm going to take a shard of glass and I'm going to kill myself. And that's really what I was planning on doing. I couldn't take it anymore. And I'm glad that I told him that. I don't know why I told him that, but I did. So they put me in an ambulance and they took me down to the hospital that was about 5 minutes down the road. And I swear to God, that ambulance ride felt like an hour. My sense of time was completely skewed, everything. So I get to this psych ward and I begged them to give me some benzos when I got in the psych ward, and they gave me some Ativan, and it offered me just enough relief for about 3 to 4 hours that I could breathe. I spent the night in the psych ward, and it was the craziest night of my life. And I did a deep dive on this on my YouTube channel, on my psychosis experience. So I'll kind of gloss over it a little bit, but suffice it to say, it was insane. I was sick. I was out of my mind. I was in the psych ward. I was scared. And I was in psychosis. I was completely nuts. It was horrendous. It was the worst thing I have ever experienced in my life. I can't even hardly, it's hard to describe. It's hard to put into words, but I just, oh my God. It was crazy. And the thoughts that were coming to me while I was in this place was insane. It was almost like my psyche was opened up, and like every insane person that had ever stayed in the psych ward, it's like their thoughts were being downloaded into me. I swear to God.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine.
It was insane. So I spend the night in this place, and something else happened to me in there though, which is important. And that's that I had this experience of reaching out to something, and I don't know what it is. I'll, you know, I call it the universe, universal intelligence, but I said, help, I can't do this anymore. Like I am at this point where I am physically, mentally incapable of taking care of myself, functioning even. I can't, you know, my cognition was completely screwed. I couldn't even hardly put words together or make sentences. And I just asked whatever was out there for help. And I felt this internal shift happen inside of me where it was like this letting go. And it was like, the only way I can describe it is by saying that I felt this something come over me saying that if you just go back to that rehab, Dan, that you're going to be okay. Just trust me. And I did. I had no other choice. I had nowhere to go. You know, I couldn't escape from this place. You know, even if I did, where was I going to go? I had no clothes. They took all my clothes and gave me a gown. I had no wallet, nothing. So I went back to the rehab. I finished out my 7 weeks, and it was torture. It was absolute torture. It was really, really scary. I was having so many crazy symptoms. I was having kind of like dark periphery around my vision. I thought I was going to stroke out. I thought I was going to seize out many times. But the only thing that they gave me that actually helped and I think saved my life was gabapentin. And they put me on 1400 milligrams of it. And it just got me to the surface enough where I could get a breath. I mean, my anxiety was through the roof. I was sweating through 5 shirts a day. I had to hold on to the railing to get down to the cafeteria to eat something. You know, I was so weak. Just the symptoms are, you know, anybody who's been through it, it's crazy. It's torture.
It is torture. And it seems endless when you're going through it.
Yeah, it does 100%. And it's scary because you ever wonder if they're ever going to let up. So I finished off my 7 weeks in this treatment center. And I get out and they send me out with gabapentin and Inderol. And I wanted to be off of everything. I just said, I'm done. I'm not taking any psych drug ever again in my freaking life. I'm off of everything. I'm brain damaged. I'm completely freaking, I can hardly function. But I want to get off of this gabapentin right now too. And there was a addiction doctor in there and he said, Dan, you are the sickest person we have ever seen come through this facility ever. And we've been open a long time. So take the gabapentin and when you're ready, taper it and give yourself a softer landing is what he told me. And, I took his advice because one day I did try to stop using the gabapentin about a month in after coming off of everything. And I just about lost my freaking mind again. So I was like, okay, it is what it is. I'm on 1400 milligrams of gabapentin and I'm just going to take my time and when I'm ready, I'm going to taper off of it. And so the next 6 months, you know, after getting out of that treatment center were hard. They were hard, but I had a ton of freaking gratitude for being off of everything. That it was the first time in my life since I had been 18 that I say off of everything. I was taking gabapentin, of course, and then Inderol, but more or less I was off of every narcotic. I was off of the benzos, which I had been taking for 13 years, you know, and the opiates and everything else. So it was hard, but I had a lot of gratitude and I started, you know, that first 6 months out of the treatment center, I really had to do a lot of work around trying to incorporate and kind of, you know, I had this spiritual experience that I had in the psych ward. And I'm like, what does that mean? What happened? Like, I knew that I came out changed. I really did. And, you know, I felt different and I wanted to do something with my life. And I figured, man, like I just went through all that, you know, if I can get well, if I can get through this and get my life back and, you know, even just form sentences and talk again.
Yeah. Know, I relate. I'm so happy that I can talk again. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. 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 When you just like, you know, I took so much for granted that, you know, I guess this process has taught me so, so much, and slowly it taught me slowly. You know, I started getting on kind of the Facebook groups and the benzo groups and, you know, reading a lot of other stories, and some of them were good and a lot of it was scary. So I had to kind of watch, you know, what I was taking in, because, you know, as well as I do, I'm sure that when you, you know, read something that's kind of a horror story, it scares you. And you just think, oh my God, like, what if that's me? What if I don't get better? You know, I'm 10 years down the road. Oh my God. And I just couldn't, I was like, I can't think that way. I can't put my attention and focus on it. It's so hard. I just have to try to keep going one day at a time and putting one foot in front of the other. And
when you were going on these groups, because you got off quite quickly, relatively in terms of others. So when you got on the groups, did you then start to realize what benzodiazepines really were and everything, you know, all the wisdom, as you will?
Yes. Yeah. A little too late, but I did. And it started to make sense. And I'm glad that there were people talking about it. And there was a lot of people writing on the groups and on the boards, because it gave me some comfort in knowing that, okay, like, all these symptoms that I'm having aren't probably, you know, indicative that I have some other disease or I have some other brain abnormality. It's most likely due to the benzos, because here's all these other people that have the exact same symptoms that I have. Right. And so in that sense, yeah, it put my mind at ease, and it did start to make sense. Like, oh my God, that's what happened. Okay. Like, everything that I just went through, it makes sense.
And I'm also very curious about, so you get off all the drugs and you have to taper the gabapentin, and at some point, you know, you're off of everything. And then I guess, you know, it takes a while, maybe years, to really heal and recover. But then you're suddenly, after all these years, off of everything, you know, right. your psych meds, everything. How did that feel? How was that? I can imagine it can be a very surreal experience when you're drugged up for so many years and then all of a sudden you're clean.
It was like walking out of a fog and looking back and going, what the hell just happened the past 13 years of my life? Right. It was. It was almost like reality was like a new drug to me.
Right.
I was like, oh my God. Like, every new experience, I mean, getting back with my family, you know, raising my daughter, going back to work, it all felt so foreign. I felt like a baby learning to live, like learning how to crawl.
Right. So, and at what point did you decide you know, do some coaching or just, you know, talk to people about, you know, your experience and all that?
Yeah. So, I, you know, for a long time, I just kind of, I didn't really talk about it at all. Except kind of, you know, in my recovery groups and stuff. But, I was on a YouTube video a few years ago. I was watching it, and, it was pertaining to benzos. I don't remember what it was, but I just left a comment and said, you know, if I could help other people with benzo use and people who are withdrawing or have been damaged by benzos, I would do anything that I could, because I'm so grateful for the healing that I've experienced. And somebody typed back and said, well, we'll just start your own channel. That's what I did. And I thought, oh, okay, I could do that. All right. But, you know, I was kind of shy to be on film. I didn't, you know, I've never made videos before. My medium and my art has always been audio. It's been music. So I thought, what the hell? You know what? I'll record a video on my phone and I don't have to release it. I'll record it. And if I don't like it and I don't feel like putting it out, I don't have to do anything with it. So I recorded a really crappy video in my truck, and, you know, the audio is horrible. Like, I had my AC on. And I'm like, well, whatever, I'm going to put it up, because I think what I'm saying might be helpful to somebody. So I did. I put it up on YouTube, and I got a really big response from it. And I had a lot of people commenting and then reaching out and then emailing me. And so I started to make more videos. And, you know, every time that I did it, it just felt right. And it felt like I was doing something useful and I was doing something helpful. And so I kept doing it. And then I had somebody reach out to me and say, you know, what about coaching? Would you do coaching? And then I had a couple more people ask me, and I thought, well, I don't know. I was very reluctant I didn't like the idea of it. I thought, you know, in my mind, why would I want to profit off of somebody else who's suffering? It didn't sit right with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I viewed it. And then I was talking to one of my friends about it, who he has a coaching, he's a fitness coach. And I was telling him about, hey, you know, I have people asking me if I would actually do this and provide this service. What do you think? You know, I just don't feel right about it. And he said, well, think about it this way. If you don't provide that, you're actually doing people a disservice by not doing that for them. And it kind of flipped the narrative that I had going on in my head. And so I said, maybe he's right. I don't know. So I started doing it. And from the first call that I ever did, everything about it felt right. Everything about it, I just knew. I was like, this feels right. This is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Like, you know, I felt the same way, you know, when my daughter was born, when I played music. I was like, I knew I was, you know, born to be a father. I knew I was born to play music. And then, you know, this just kind of came about too. And it's a blessing to be able to do. And I feel honored that, you know, people trust me enough to reach out and let me be a part of their healing journey. It's amazing. And I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, I've been hearing that a lot from coaches that I've had on the show or just spoke to, that it's very much a two-way stream. And, you know, they feel nice helping other people, and, you know, the people feel nice being helped. And, you know, who else is going to have that same lived experience, right? There's not a lot of us who could provide that. So I think it's awesome that you're doing that. So I'm going to put the links for you in the podcast description, but maybe you can say them here as well for the audience.
Yeah, so I'm on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram as Philosophical Fishing, and I don't have a website yet, but I'm working on that. So if you just go to my YouTube or my Instagram, there's a link tree. You can just hit the link tree, and then there's a tab for work with me one-on-one for coaching, and you can just sign up there.
Cool, cool. And is there, I always ask all my guests if there's something like words of wisdom for someone who is listening, who's currently in withdrawal, something that helped you or you think can help.
Yeah, just keep going, keep going. Put one foot in front of the other. You know, the days turn into weeks, the weeks turn into months, and the months turn into years. And go easy on yourself. Take it easy on yourself, because you're going through a lot. You know, these drugs damage us so, so deeply. And it takes time. I think everybody thinks that they're the worst, and they're the worst damaged by this drug. And that's pretty common. But, you know, just give it time and give yourself a lot of patience and a lot of grace. And just keep going. I think just keep going is half the battle. You know, the other half is the other healthy things that we begin to incorporate into our lives. But, you know, I've been through it. I've been through hell and come out the other side. And so I know that healing's possible for people. And that's what I want people to take away from it. You know, just have a little bit of hope that you can come through it too.
Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you so much for making the time and being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.